This week on Art on the Air, we feature contemporary artist Peggy Davis, whose work uses bold colors based on flowers, trees, and leaves. We'll be on exhibit at Valparaiso Country Inn and Suites. Next, we have Beth Golding describing her artisan soap products that are actually small works of art. Our spotlight is on artist Aaron Melendez, discussing his exhibit opening at the Depot on September 9th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. You'll be having an exhibit at the Depot that's located on 525 South Broadway in Beverly Shores, or I like to say just north of US 12. We have Aaron Melendez, and he grew up in Northwest Indiana, and he has a whole wide range of things, but he'll be having an exhibit there opening on September 9th and running through the month of September at the Depot. Aaron, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Aloha, welcome. Aaron, is this exhibit going to be mostly nature or the nature and dunescapes?
It'll be mostly dunescapes and the nature part. I mean, that includes nature part, but it'll be dunescapes and birds. So not together particular, but separate.
So when you were young, did you find yourself drawing birds in nature, or is that where you started out in art drawing?
Not so much birds. I would draw anything and everything. I mean, from planes to whatever I saw. But as I went along, usually the things that I liked to keep drawing and painting were places I wanted to be.
Ah, can you describe that?
Mostly just outside. Like, I didn't grow up. Although I grew up in the area, I didn't go to the dunes quite a lot. And as I got older, I started venturing out more, and I would go there on weekends or whatnot. And I love going there. I love hiking there, and started bird watching, I guess you could say.
Sure. So, Aaron, tell us a little about your background. You know, how you got, you know, like Esther started that, but like where you went to college or how you got more into the art, and a little bit about the media that you use.
Okay, so I use watercolor mostly. I'm not limited to watercolor, although it's my preferred medium. I do a lot of digital work as well, which won't be on exhibit here.
Which I love, by the way.
Thank you.
I love the digital work.
Thank you. Yeah, so when I had went to college at the American Academy of Art in Chicago, I went there with a focus to do digital illustration. But as I took some electives, I ventured out and started doing watercolor. I found that challenging, and of course I like to do things the hard way, so I decided that watercolor was going to be it.
Yeah, watercolor
is very
difficult.
Unforgiving.
And outside of art, you actually were in the Marine Corps. Tell us maybe real briefly about that service that you had, and thank you for your service, by the way.
Oh yes, this is true. So right out of high school, I had went to the Marine Corps. So I was torn in between going to art school or the Marine Corps, or debating on whether I can do both at the same time. So it was kind of mixed. I was able to do the reserves and get a couple of years active through there, and then kind of postpone a scholarship for the American Academy. And so I kind of went there, and then in between deployments, I went back to school and then came back. And so it was quite an adventure. It took a little while to graduate.
I'm sure. So your exhibit, what can we expect to see in your exhibit that's coming up at the depot?
So here we're going to have about half of the paintings will be dunes of like the Indiana dunes, different areas. So some there will be Beverly Shores. I got a Michigan City one in there. Mount Baldy will be in there as well. Just different locations. And then there'll be different birds that are found within these areas. So we'll have those as well. And it's all going to be in watercolor. They're not too big. There'll be one large piece. But yeah, they're fun. They're very tedious to make, because I like to spend a lot of detail. Most of the work will be representational, if not all of it.
So Aaron, are the birds all locally found, or do you reach beyond the area for your subject matter?
I do reach beyond, but in this particular show, they'll all be found within the Indiana dunes.
And do you do anything outside of the, like, our local area? I know you're from that, but are there any topics or subjects that you'd like to use for as an inspiration for your work?
What's funny is that I like using color in the pieces, and like, so, a lot of my favorite artists aren't even representational, even though I paint that way. Like, my favorite would be Mark Rothko, and you're not going to see anything that looks like that. Although you might see a couple of design elements in the background in certain pieces.
Yeah, very tonal. So Aaron, I had read that you like the juxtaposition, sort of industrial and nature. Do you also paint? Are there any of your paintings that include those two dynamics?
I'm not entirely sure I'm going to have that on display, but I have made some pieces that would have like wildlife interacting in ways with our garbage, like things we leave behind. Not so much our garbage, but showing the human element that's present. I don't believe I have any pieces that are going to be on display for the show in this area, but yeah, there's a lot of varieties and topics that I like to move into, and I never stay long though, because I get bored.
So personally, what are you working on now artistically?
Right now I'm trying to make sure that everything's ready for the show. After that, I think I got to move into some logo work for the wife and I's company. We'll go that way.
Excellent. Well, we have just about 30 seconds left. Tell us about when the exhibit is, what where it is, and all that type of thing. Tell us, Aaron, some of the wrap-up details here and your website.
September 9th at the Beverly Shores Depot, and I want to say...
You have 5 to 7 p.m., and it's at Depot is 525 South Broadway, which is just north of U.S. 12. So, and what's your website real quick?
AaronMelendez.com.
Okay. And if you want to find out information about the Depot, it's bsdepot.org. Aaron Melendez, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight. And his exhibit is opening September 9th, 5 to 7. That's a Friday, a second Friday, as the tradition goes there. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on.
Good opening. Thank you, Aaron.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Peggy Davis to Art on the Air. Peggy is called the happy painter by her community. Her paintings feature bright, bold colors with a whimsical flair, inspired by her love of color and nature. The themes focus on flower gardens, landscapes, seascapes, and occasionally wildlife. usually including large, oversized leaves and flowers. Thank you, Peggy, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hello.
Hello.
Well, Peggy, how we like to always start our interviews is kind of just finding out a lot about your background, how you grew up, whether it's artistic, and share as much about your life as you are, not only artistic, but otherwise. And I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So, Peggy, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'd like to say that I always was drawing. I started drawing when I was very, very young. The youngest I can remember is about 5 years old. My mom has quite a few things that she had saved from when I was very young and hung them around the house. I went to high school and I was in art for about 4 years. I took it every year. I wanted to take other classes, but I wanted to take art more. So I took that. I had a really wonderful teacher. His name was Dr. Felischetti. And he showed us all kinds of the basic things. And, I really didn't have much of an imagination. So I really was frustrated in the class. But he really, scooted me along and taught me a lot of things. I continued to paint. I really didn't talk to anybody about it other than my family. Most people didn't know that I drew or painted or anything like that. I really was kind of embarrassed of doing it. I was afraid that people would think it was stupid and dumb and or that I was bragging. And so I really didn't tell too many people about what I was doing. But I spent a lot of my afternoons painting and drawing and mostly birds back then and horses and dinosaurs for whatever reason. I don't know. I got married.
Were dinosaurs because of children?
No, I just was young and I just liked dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs?
Just like most little boys, I just liked dinosaurs. I just thought they were cool. So I focused on drawing dinosaurs. I doodled a lot in class. School was kind of boring. So I think that happens for a lot of creative people. School's kind of boring. So I drew a lot in school and watched what other people drew and kind of tried to mimic what they drew. When I got married, I had children and I stopped. But then I started painting furniture. I was painting furniture way before anybody else was painting furniture. I painted flowers on, all my kids' dressers or, animals, all kinds of things for the boys. And I drew daisies on the wall and I'd go and do my friends' kids' rooms. And then I started doing murals for people and I did murals in daycares. I did murals for people's, playrooms at their homes. And I just did that for years. I think as I got older, I just kind of started to gravitate into different areas. There was the faux finishing time. I faux finished everybody's houses. I marbleized everything and drew grapes and, painted columns and, I made myself books of all these different finishes so that I could show people. I always liked working for myself. I was a waitress for years. I waitressed for like 30 years, but in my spare time, I just liked doing it and I just had to do it. I always said I had like an itch. And if I didn't take care of that itch, I would become like just restless. I mean, I cross stitched, I crocheted, I baked, I gardened, anything that kept me moving, and then, like I said, I painted in between at people's homes and my best friend came along and I taught her how to paint murals. We did scenery sets for Sunday schools and for daycares. We got in the paper a few times, there was pictures of us painting barefooted, and standing on ladders and it was fun. I mean, it was just a way to, after you came home from work, when the kids were in school, I would just set up different, appointments and we would go and we would do it. And that went on for quite a few years of doing different, things. There was always somebody asking me to paint something. And so I did. As I got a little older, we had raised our first set of kids. We have six children. And so we raised our first three. And my husband and I adopted three more children. So we were foster parents for about 2 years before we adopted. And we adopted children three children with some special needs, and it was very stressful. So I decided I needed to start doing something. So I sat down and started painting again. And so I painted, I decided to paint on canvas. Now, when I was growing up, I didn't really paint on canvas. I painted on things. I painted on walls. I painted on furniture. I painted on paper. I painted little kids' tables, anything I could paint, I just painted. But I decided it was time to learn to paint on canvas. So I started learning, and it was terrible, just horrible. And but I worked on it, and I worked on it.
Was that because it was, was it because it was a rigid, maybe squarish shape? Did you have to think about the design differently? What made it more difficult? The fact that it moved?
No, I think it was because it was rigid, but I also think because I had to think about the design more. You know, when you're painting on walls for children, you're painting castles and you're painting trees and, you know, little princesses, and you don't really have to think. You can, you know, you can go home and you can sit down and you can kind of plan it out. And then not only that, but the people that you're working for, they have an idea of what they want. So when I started painting on canvas, you know, it was really foreign to me to decide where to, you know, without copying somebody else's work, how to do a landscape. I hadn't taken any classes. Other than school, I didn't take any painting classes. So in school, we learned chalk and charcoal, you know, the basics in pencil and, you know, stippling, and you learn all of those things, but I had never actually put any of them into real practice. We didn't paint on canvases in school.
Right.
There were more projects. And so while I did really good at the projects and I loved them, it wasn't the same as actually sitting down and doing a scape of some kind. And so, the first one I sold, I was so excited on Etsy. And then I don't know why this person bought it. It was horrible. It was horrible. And I realized it later that I had actually sold them something that was terrible. And I didn't trim the sides. I didn't know how to hang it. I didn't know how to seal things properly. And so I started to watch everybody, and I would study everybody's art and see what they were doing. And I slowly was able to start figuring out
kind of what your style was.
Well, that takes a while to do. So I painted everything. I painted all kinds of different things. So I worked on textures, and I worked on, you know, folk art, and I tried everything, but eventually you start to gravitate towards what you like. So there's lots of things I know how to do. I just don't do them because they're not really what I want to do. So I started getting better on Etsy, and I started selling, you know, 3 to 5 paintings a week. And I got really happy with that. Etsy's kind of changed their format. So I decided to move on from that after a while. And I decided, I'm watching everybody and I'm listening to everybody. And I started noticing that people had their art on prints, you know, like on, I don't know what they're called, they're, where you can load your art up to print on demand sites. And so I noticed that people had their art on that. So then I started uploading my art on print demand sites. And then I had to learn how to take pictures. And I didn't know how to take pictures. So I had to figure out, you know, and I didn't know when people ordered them, if they were getting good pieces or if they were getting blurry pieces. So it took a lot of, you know, time and energy to figure out, a lot of trial and error. And I'm sure a few people have bought a few things that they were a little disappointed because I didn't know exactly what I was doing. And, you know, I asked a lot of questions, but a lot of people don't really answer them for you. So now when people call me and they ask me questions, and people do it all the time, I always tell them, you know, how to do something, you know, what kind of scanner to use, what kind of camera to use. I don't know everything, but I do know some things. And so, and I'm constantly learning. So I got on the print demand sites, and after a while I decided I didn't want to do just that. I wanted to be on some of the bigger print sites that were run by companies that sell to hospitals and lawyers' offices and doctors' offices. And so I started applying to different licensing companies, asking, you know, sending some of my work off and seeing if anybody would take them. And I applied to quite a few, and quite a few did not call me back. And then eventually one called me back. And I kind of, you know, worked on watching what they were the kind of artists that they were, well, the company that I have for prints, they have all different kinds of artists. They have museum quality, they have pop art, they have, you know, floral art, landscapes, photography, they have everything. But still, I wanted to see kind of like the different genres that they were working in and what they were looking for. And so I started teaching myself that. And so it was about, I got involved with McGaw Graphics about 5 years ago, and they're the ones who do my print work. And I had asked, it said they were a licensing company. So I was like, woohoo, licensing, that's what I want to do. And so about two, I kept asking, you know, I noticed none of my stuff was getting picked up. And I was kind of worried. So I'd ask, and they said, it's too early for you, Peggy. Don't worry, it'll happen. And so about 2 years into it, I had a gentleman contact me, and he asked me if he could represent me. And I said, and I knew who the gentleman was, and I felt that he had found me kind of underhandedly. And I really didn't like that. So I said, you know, I'm already with the company. I'm sorry, I can't. And he said, well, the company that you're with doesn't do product licensing. Well, then I was like, what? I didn't say that to him, but later I was like, oh my gosh. So I contacted my company and they said, no, they didn't. And even though they said they were a licensing company. So I started looking for a product licensing agent. And I worked with my print company, and I was able to get a separate contract so that I wouldn't hurt my first contract. So I had two licensing agents, one for print work and one for products. And I now am with both McGaw Graphics and I am with Porterfield. And Porterfields does my product licensing. And so that is a way to get me onto puzzles and fabric and cards. And I'm on, you know, on tiles and nightlights and different things like that. So it was a long time of watching and looking at what other people were doing and scouring the internet and reading and just trying to decide, you know, how to go about getting into it. And then you have to, once you figure out where you want to apply, because you can't just apply anywhere, you have to, because I mean, you could be painting wolves, you know, and they only represent floral artists. Or, you know, you could be painting wolves, which are amazing to paint, but maybe there's not a big product need for wolves on things, you know, and that's just an example. I mean, it can be anything. So you really have to think, you know, what kind of licensing company you're going for. And then you have to make sure that you fit into their licensing, what licenses they would like to represent, or you just can't think, I want to be in this company. And
it sounds like a lot of homework before you, because it takes a lot of effort to do it. So it's probably best to find who you best fit with. And so
you're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Yeah, because, you know, we tend to look at different companies, and we tend to think, I could do that. But you don't want to do what they exactly have, because they don't need you. They already have that. So you have to find your style, and you have to make sure that once you develop your style, that your style is something that is a little different than what they have, but will fit still into their genre. And so, and you still need to be you. So it's really difficult to be you and yet be you in a style, in your style, in a way that somebody else will want it, and it'll fit into their style. And so it is difficult. And I mean, all that, you know, all that time, you're still developing your own skills. And it's not just painting skills. You have to develop computer skills, which I am not good at. And you have to develop Photoshop skills and photography skills. And I mean, there's just so many things you have to do. I mean, I can't tell you, when I started Photoshop, it took me a month of, you know, yelling at my computer, and not yelling, like, I don't understand. What am I doing? You know, and then you would get a digital file already and send it off, and they'd be like, nope, not going to take that one. And you're like, why? And again, you know, I think the premise out there by a lot of the licensing companies is they don't really need to tell you what to do because there's enough stuff on the internet that you should figure it out on your own. And so you really do have to kind of figure it out on your own. And I mean, you're talking, you know, the DPI and the size, and there's a lot to learn. So then you're editing your own photography, you're editing your own paintings, you know, you have to learn to scan them, you have to learn to digitize them. There's a lot of work in it. So it took me a long time and a lot of work, but I finally figured out how to do some things and enough that I'm out there. And so now I'm on puzzles and things like that. But I developed, I think the flowers, I first started painting with trees and landscapes. That was like my big seller on Etsy. Nobody bought my flowers, not at all. They didn't want to have anything to do with my flowers. And so I really was kind of bored with the flowers and I did landscapes. And then when I got into the print work and I got into the product licensing, they wanted the flowers. They didn't want the trees because flowers are on everything. You know, they're on cards, they're on linen, they're on wallpaper. So all of a sudden my flowers became more important than my trees and my landscapes. So I still do landscapes and but they really like birds and flowers. So I've kind of perfected that. And I've always painted big. I've always painted big flowers, big leaves. I started doing that right away. My perspective is always to make my paintings look like you're sitting in the garden. So you're right up on them. So everything is kind of, you know, in your face.
So are you still jazzed with doing the flowers and the birds? I mean, does it still excite you or are you thinking of other directions?
Yeah. No, right now I do like the flowers. I think when you start watching other artists, you tend to want to go where they go. And I follow a lot of artists on Instagram and most of them are doing art for napkins and plates and towels and sheets and linens. And I'm like, oh, I want to, you know, go to the store and I want to see my stuff on linens, you know, I want to see them on plates. And though, unfortunately, and fortunately at the same time, the agent that I have is kind of a little old school, but in a good way. And so he said, nah, you know, there's no money in that. And there probably is, but he has his direction that he likes to go. And so he started putting me on puzzles and that kind of took off. And I said to my husband, finally, I said, I don't know what I was all worried about. I said, who cares if I'm a puzzle painter? I like being a puzzle painter. And so I paint things for puzzles, you know? So that's pretty much what I do. I follow people and I watch what the trends are and I watch what the colors are. I watch what the color palettes for the year are. And my goal though is still to work on more seasonal items, more Christmas, more Easter, you know, more 4th of July. That is one area that I would like to get better at. And now that I've kind of accomplished, you know, painting gardens and birds and, you know, trees and things like that, I'd kind of like to go a little more specific without getting away from my flowers and my trees and my animals.
What do you enjoy painting? I mean, you've got all these things that you're kind of painting sort of on spec, but what do you enjoy also those things that you are painting that end up being also commercial products and licensed?
You know, I still paint what I want to paint. I just tailor everything. So like right now I just got a contract to paint a couple of paintings for a corporation, a company that provides corporate art out in Texas. And so when I paint that, they sent me what they wanted. They did a deep dive on me and they found some of my older work, which is terrible. But the two pieces that they picked are kind of cute. So I'm just going to kind of bring them up just a little bit to where I am right now without kind of, you know, but when I paint those, I will paint them in a way that I can use them for other things. So I don't paint anything for anybody or anything that I cannot, you know, use later on for that can go on a product somewhere. So I always have that in mind. I make sure when I'm, you know, putting my flowers in certain places that I know that they won't get cut off, you know, or anything for whatever can be used. So I still get to paint what I want to paint when I want to paint it. I just decide to make sure that it can fit something else later on down the road.
You know, last week you had an art opening, and actually it was the premier art opening at the Country Inn and Suites in Valparaiso, and that was facilitated by the Valpo Creative Council. So tell us about the opening, and they just are brand new at doing this, and so they're featuring some of your work. So tell us about the opening, and tell us about what we can see, and how long it will be there.
Well, the Valpo Creative Council has decided to bring a lot more art into Valparaiso, and so they decided to work with local artists and feature them. So they decided, I got lucky enough that they picked me to be one of their first artists. And what they're going to do, there's two venues in Valparaiso that they're going to use, Country Inn and Suites, and then there's going to be a cafe, or there is a cafe that they're using later on down the road. And so Country Inn and Suites, really, the owner loves art. Her sister is a nice artist. And so they really have an affinity to artists, and they really wanted to be one of the venues. And so there are eight pieces, I think eight or nine pieces. So it's in their lobby where everybody first walks in, a ribbon cutting ceremony. And they're going to invite, obviously, the Chamber of Commerce and people from the community to come in and look at the art and possibly purchase it. And then I'll rehang new pieces as they sell. But it's just a way to really bring art into the Valparaiso community.
That's a great moment that you had with the ribbon cutting and having the chamber and everything on the opening last week. So, well, we have just about a minute left, so we want to find out exactly how people can find your art online and your website and everything like that. So tell us a little bit about that.
All right. Well, if they're looking for print work, they can go to magawgraphics.com. They can find really good print art, not just by me, but lots of other artists. They do canvas work and framework. If they can find me on Instagram, I'm Peggy Davis Art on Instagram. I'm also Peggy Davis Art on Facebook, so you can look me up there and find me. If a person is looking for product design, they can go to porterfieldsfineart.com and find me, and again, with a bunch of other great artists on there. And that's where I am right now. And I answer as quickly as I can, anybody who contacts me, so.
Good thing.
It's great. Well, Peggy, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Arts, sharing not only about your art, but the whole process of marketing your art. That'll be Valpo Creative Council is going to have that at the Country Inn and Suites in Valparaiso. We had the opening last week, and it will continue for, I think, 3 months at that location, or 4 weeks, and you can see Peggy's art there. Peggy Davis, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Thank you. It was so interesting.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BREC.com. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Beth Golding to Art on the Air. Beth is a self-taught artist with a lifetime of diverse art experiences. Currently, she creates beautifully presented soaps and custom pet portraits. In her long art career, she designed leather clothing, created costumes, worked in interior design, and also web design. We look forward to exploring the progression of your career, Beth. Thank you for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hi.
Hi, welcome, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, Beth, we always like to find out a little bit about our guests, their entire kind of life history, if you will, to share with our audience. I always like to describe how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
Well, I actually grew up in Michigan City and graduated from Elston High School. And after I graduated, I don't want to age myself, but in the 1980s from high school, I went on my artistic career path and started my own custom leather clothing company. And I worked primarily out in the southwestern states and made custom leather clothing and southwestern art and jewelry. And I did that for a great number of years. And then from there, I progressed on to the Pacific Northwest, up into the Seattle region. And up in the Seattle region is where I started making my pet portraits. And then I did also custom clothing design, costuming. And then I went into the interior arts. I was a manager at the Seattle Design Center for many years where I managed a showroom, and I primarily specialized in hospitality interior design along with residential design. So I worked a lot with that. And then back in the early 2008, both my parents were still living here in Michigan City, and they were approaching, I hate to say, the end of their life. And so I was the good daughter and came back home. And ever since I've been back home, I've been working with my pet portraits, and I'm also currently going to school and getting my degree in visual communications. And then I also then started the working with the Bee Gold Urban Farm and the soap design. And that's kind of from there to here.
So was your family artistic? What was your grade school? I mean, like, what kind of art did you do in those beginning years?
Well, I come from a family of artists on my father's side. So my grandmother was an incredibly talented artist. She actually did the old fashioned China dolls, like what you see in the museums from like the 1800s. The old fashioned China dolls, where she would make the dolls and the clothing and all that. So that's how I grew my love of clothing and costume design and things of that nature. And my father then was also an incredibly talented artist. He was actually in the Boy Scouts for 65 years. And in being a part of the Boy Scouts, he was the person who designed all the scout patches for all the Klondikes and the Derbies and all of that. So he was an incredibly talented artist. And I just picked it up from him. And so as a kid, I was pretty much encouraged just to create and make and do whatever my heart felt with my from my growing up. So I worked with paintings and macrame and jewelry and sewing and, I mean, just a little bit of everything. And
did you do costumes for theater during like high school or during school productions? Were you involved in that way?
Not at all. In fact, I took art classes in high school, but they were just, you know, the basic art classes. One of my specialties in then was pottery and throwing on the wheel and working in pottery. So I did a lot of that in high school. But not really costume. I didn't get into costume design until later on in my career in Seattle, after I'd already been working in the custom leather clothing and kind of learning the ropes of how to make your own clothing that way. And then I geared into the costume design after that.
So what kind of designs were you doing? Was it like pants and jackets, or was it purses and, you know,
for the custom leather clothing?
Yes.
Yes. I was doing, dresses, jackets, pants, purses, a little bit of everything. I actually had some entertainers from Mexico who would buy my clothing. I was featured in several of the very exclusive galleries in Sedona, Arizona. And so I was featured my clothes in the Tlacopaki, if I'm saying that correctly, back then in Sedona, Arizona. And so I had more of an elite clientele for my clothing. And so it was interesting. So yeah, it just depended on what their needs were, and I would literally custom make it to them. And so that was fascinating. And I did that for about a dozen years before I went to the Pacific Northwest.
And so what sent you that way? It's such a change in climate.
The change in climate.
Oh.
The day that it hit 129 degrees in Phoenix, I was done. I said, that's it. I'm done. I can't do it, you know, because when they talk about frying an egg on the sidewalk, yes, you can. You know, how would you like your omelet? Because it was just too hot. I couldn't do the heat anymore. And so I moved to the Pacific Northwest simply to cool down and have a change of pace.
Now, you said earlier that you were a professor. Where are you doing that, and what are you teaching?
I work with Ivy Tech Community College. I've been with them since I moved back here in 2008. A little bit beyond being an artist, I'm also a complete and total computer nerd. I was actually working for Microsoft in Seattle when I came here. And so now at Ivy Tech, I teach business and computer science technology classes. So it could be anything from learning how to work with Office, the Office Suite products, all the way up to designing your own smart house with a Raspberry Pi electronics. So I can build them and program them and code them and do whatever you want to do. So
I've got so fabulous
left, right brain working and as far as my technology and artwork, because I use both sides of the brain and my creativity.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. Maybe not quite as much depth there, but I already was working with computers all the way back in high school when they were all like filled up a whole room and you did data punch cards and everything. And then
of course
when the Apple II computer came out, I actually wrote software on tape before, you know, I didn't have a disk drive at the first thing. So yeah, I know that. And then I also have the left right brain thing because I do creative things. Very good. Mm-hmm. So you came back to the region to take care of your parents, and so you landed here. When was that? And we know the motivation, but then where did you land when you came back here?
Well, when I came back here, I came back to Michigan City, and I actually kind of moved in with my mother because she needed the assistance at that point. And then I started as a student at Ivy Tech. And while I was the primary caregiver of my parents while they were in their passing, I also went and got my MBA graduate degree at the same time. And so I got my degree, and then once I got my degree, that's when I went into teaching. But I also, right when I came back, started working with Ivy Tech. I actually started in their IT department, working in their IT, because I was building the labs and building the computers and programming them and setting up, you know, the labs and what have you. And then, like I said, it just kind of morphed into becoming a teacher after that. It just progressed. And so I do that now. I teach classes online with Ivy Online. Ever since, you know, when the COVID protocols and everything hit, I kind of left the classroom and went online. And so I like working online. I've been doing that ever since, which is nice because then that gives me the freedom working at home to work in the studio also, and saving myself huge commute time and classroom time every day.
How did you find your way to soaps?
Well, initially when I started with Bee Gold Urban Farm, I was actually started out with an urban farm growing microgreens. And it, unfortunately, due to the weather situation, I wasn't doing so well with the microgreens because of just heat and humidity. It was just taking out my crops and was just not working for me. And so at that point I said, let's switch to soaps. I've never done it. Let's do something new. And so I did. And that's kind of how I got started working in soaps, is because the microgreens didn't work.
You know, and everybody will have their image of soaps when, you know, they think about a handmade soap product, but yours is just so uniquely different, from the packaging to the way you design them and the whole look of them. I mean, you've really taken it to like this beautiful, beautiful level. So can you kind of talk about how you developed your look, maybe? And
sure. A lot of my look comes from my interior design past. My mother actually was a huge fan of very flowery wallpaper, and Laura Ashley was a huge designer back in the 80s and 90s who did very flowery
everything.
Everything. And so that was a big influence in my packaging, because I'm a big fan of kind of the cottage core interior design look. And with the urban farm, I wanted it to be kind of contemporary, cottagecore, vintage, kind of a mix of all the above, and just to make it flowery and pretty, because when you think of pretty soaps, you think of flowery and pretty. And so that's kind of how my look started to develop, was with finding the right packaging and then just kind of building the brand from there.
Yeah, it has tremendous eye appeal, you know, as well as just being a beautiful product. I mean, you really have taken great care with the way you've presented it.
Thank you so much. I think a lot of having my MBA degree has helped with my business acumen as far as, you know, packaging and branding and the look and the colors and the feel. Definitely my education has come into play to help with all of that for sure. But yeah, I just, you know, I wanted something girly and pretty, and that's kind of what I went with. And then I discovered the molds, because initially I was pouring in block, 10-pound blocks, and chopping the blocks, as you normally think of soaps when you think
exactly.
of soap. But that was becoming too hard on my wrists with my carpal tunnel, constantly chopping those blocks, hundreds and hundreds of bars of soap. So then I found some beautiful molds.
Very beautiful.
That I discovered. So then I kind of switched what I was doing with the soap making and going into these beautiful molds and making it more of a creative art form as opposed to just a custom bar of soap. And so my soap, I consider it to be more of gifty kind of soap. Something that you would buy, oh, this is beautiful, I want to give it as a gift to my friend, as opposed to I just want a bar of soap to go take a bath with, right? And I love doing it with the molds because it allows me to be artistic and creative and mix all the colors and experiment with the colors and the layers and all the visuals and
sparkles. The way you name them and the way you name them are very creative as well.
Yeah, I've got some fun ones in there. I've got some just normal ones, but I've got some funny ones also.
Very.
Well, you know, and the other thing, I'm on your website looking at it, you not only have human soaps, you have soaps for other animals and things. So tell us a little about how you got into doing different kind of dog wash soaps and everything like that.
Well, that falls back into doing the custom pet portraits because I've been working with, I'm a big animal lover and all animals. And with the pet portraits, I've worked with animals most of my life and I love them and I've been surrounded by them. And I have a little Jack Russell dog who is very rambunctious and free spirited and gets very dirty sometimes because she loves to run and play and roll in the dirt. And so I just thought, you know, I'm going to make a dirty dog wash soap so I can wash her smelly little self. And then I thought, you know what, I'm doing the soaps. Let's bottle this up and sell it. And that's what I'm doing. And so now I have the liquid soap and the dry bar for the dogs who get kind of with oatmeal that get the itchies and the hot spots. And then I also have little dog print hand soaps for people. And now I've expanded out into body washes, but more for people than dogs. So I'm expanding the product line as the business grows.
And also you have soaps that treat specific issues too, don't you? Like more in the healing realm?
I do. I have studied apothecary and botanicals and herbs most of my life, because I'm a health nut and I like basic natural. I'm an old hippie at heart, so I like everything just basic and natural. And so I started creating the healing soaps because I want to help people also. That's one of my life missions, not only as a teacher, but also just to help people. That's in my spirit. And so my healing soaps, I have everything from anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antibacterial, skin healing, moisturizing, acne, sunburn, muscle rescue, helps you. I have Breathe-Easy that helps you breathe, that opens up your airways. I have tea tree. I have coffee. My coffee soap is made with Arabica coffee so that you can just smell good and wakes you up in the morning and scrubs your skin with a natural scrub. So yeah, just lots of fun stuff.
You even have bacon soap, which
I do. I also have a honey ale beer soap. So I do what I call the Midwestern gift box, which is bacon and beer. Which makes a great gift, but the bacon soap, if you're a bacon lover, this is the stuff. It smells just like bacon.
And it looks sharp because you have a little pig on there, with, like in, coming out of flowers and everything. I mean, if you look at your website, I mean, they are works of art in and of themselves. I'm not sure you even want to use the soaps. You just put them out. They're really pretty and well, yeah, they're just beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, BeGoldUrbanFarm.com. Yep. Thank you so much. Yeah, I try to make things that I think that people would enjoy and they like. One of the biggest comments I get, one of the main comments I get feedback from my clientele is that it's too beautiful to use. We don't want to use it because it's too pretty. And I tell people, be beautiful in the bath. I make them to be used so that you feel pampered and special and treat yourself to something nice that makes you come out feeling wonderful and smelling wonderful and
makes you feel good when you just look at it. Right. You have one that just looks like a piece of labradorite. It's just like so beautiful what you've done with the colors and the sheen.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually was making some that look like actual gemstones. So I do some that look like amethyst geodes and citrine geodes and things of that nature. I've done some of those. I don't have any of those on the website right now, but that's something I've done in the past.
It truly lets you be creative in all sorts of different ways. It's kind of like the total package of being able to be creative.
It is. And the thing that I enjoy most about owning my own soap business is one that, well, of course, being your own boss, but also the fact that no day is ever the same every day. I mean, one day I'm pouring batches of something. One day I'm doing photography and building the website. One day I'm out promoting the business and working. I work four different markets this summer. So I'm out working the markets. So every day
Why don't you say which markets those are?
Sure. I am at the Michigan City Farmers Market on Saturday from 8 to noon. I'm at the New Buffalo, Michigan Farmers Market on Thursday nights from 4 to 8. I work at the Dockside Artisan Market, which is on Sundays from 10 to 2. That's in Michigan City. And then I will be on the Labor Day weekend. I will be at the Chesterton European Market, which is from 8 to 2 in Chesterton. And that'll be in the first weekend in September that I'll be there. I don't do that one. Only on holiday weekends is when I'm at that one. So between all those markets and doing what I'm doing, it's just, I'm busy every day.
Full day.
Full day, every day.
And is it your sales better in the market season, or are you finding that you're selling quite a bit from like your website or direct contact?
Well, right now, I just literally started this business in the last year. And so most of my sales at this point have been in the markets. But right now, I am currently building my website. I had to I upgraded my web store on website, and unfortunately, I have to build it completely from scratch. So right now, my website, I'm going to have it hopefully up and fully functional here in the next day or two. But I'm getting everything loaded into the site right now. You can at least see what I have for sale. It's just the purchasing part of the site that I have to get finished at this point. And that'll be up and running in the next day or two. I'm working as quickly as I can to get the site up. I'm hoping to do some Christmas shows. Last year, I did the Michigan City Crafters Fair last November. I'm hoping to do that again at the Michigan City High School. I also was at the Lebesnik Art Center last Christmas for their Christmas craft show, and I'm hoping to be there again. But I'm also beginning to expand my presence in Amazon, Etsy, and some of these online stores and getting that going. I don't have any social media accounts up at this point yet. I'm trying to get the website built first before the social media accounts, but that is coming soon also. So everything is at the BeGoldUrbanFarm.com at this point, if anyone wants to look at my work.
It's so exciting. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. I love doing what I do, and I love helping people. And I think in this time and age, after coming out of COVID, that soap is a great practical gift And that's kind of what I built my brand around, is giving these as gifts to people and just feeling good and being beautiful.
And they're really works of art. I mean, I'm still looking at them from the different categories. And there's different scents and everything like that. It's just amazing how you've done that. So we got 1 minute left. Tell us a little bit what you hope down the road here. You kind of hit on that, and make sure we get your website and contact information out one more time, Beth.
Sure. My website is BEGOLDURBANFARM, BeGoldUrbanFarm.com. And that's where everything is at. You can see me either at one of the four farmers markets and visit me there, or you can visit my website. And again, I'm hoping to have social media up going soon and selling online in other various retail places as soon as possible.
Excellent. Well, we really appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Beth Golden, Gold Urban Farm. It's the website again is BeGoldUrbanFarm.com, and you can contact her also with that at gmail.com. You know, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your wonderful artisan soaps.
Well, thank you.
Your whole career is so interesting. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so grateful that you've interviewed me today. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Beth.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We would like to thank our current supporters and underwriters, which include regional art patron Mary Levan and Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good, and you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.